Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. The weather may have gone a little haywire in London over the past week, but we're under good authority that summer is just around the corner. And so to tempt the sun out, we're looking ahead to the brighter months to discuss what we're looking forward to in art, music and film. I'm lucky to be sitting at a table of cultural minds who've planned out my summer for me, whether it's the big blockbusters at the cinema, the top New York art shows, or my poolside playlist. And those minds belong to film critic Karen Krizanovic, head of content at the Listen Gallery, Ossian Ward, and the broadcaster and DJ Nick Luscombe. That's all to come on today's episode of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Do stay tuned. And here we are. Nick, Karen, Ossian, welcome to the programme. We talked about cultural minds, but what beautiful bodies. I feel like just looking at your choices on my script here, that it's going to be an amazing summer, even if the weather stays appalling. And just stay in, right? It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's going to be okay. Yeah. We're going to start with film. Karen Krizanovic, welcome.
Hello.
First of all, we are going blockbuster. We're going to start with the new rebooted all-female Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
What on earth do we expect from this? Do we expect as much charm as with the first installments?
Well, you can't expect that. It's 30 years ago, you know, very few, except for me. I look great. You know, I look the same for 30 years. This is by the director of Bridesmaids, which, of course, was an amazing breakthrough film, whether you liked all of it or not. Paul Feig, who was sort of in a backwater a bit with doing the Bridget Jones movie. He kind of got stuck in that and then suddenly spat out and right into this project, which a lot of people are very, very excited about because it's got Chris Hemsworth. Because he's, if you look online, look at the list of actors, he's listed first, but he plays a receptionist.
Yeah, so okay, so nice. In role reversal, he is the sassy New York receptionist.
Yes, this is where all the stuff that women hated being perpetrated on them, they get to perpetrate back because it's okay to do that. That's not sexism. No. It is, of course. Melissa McCarthy, Christian Vig, Sigourney Weaver, Charles Dance, Elizabeth Perkins. It's a massive, massive, great cast. And I think Feig has got writers, Katie Dippold, and he's also written it, and Harold Ramis, Ivan Reitman, and Dan Aykroyd have the writing credits. So I think it's going to be, if not great, an interesting failure.
Okay.
I think visually it's going to be amazing. And I think we're all just going to have to go see it because we're all going to talk about it. The stills look good. Don't cross the streams.
On that note, shall we see how ironic we're feeling and have a clip of the new rebooted Ghostbusters? This season's must see, says Karen Krizanovic.
Someone is creating a device that amplifies paranormal activity. And we might be the only ones who can stop it.
Holtzman! Come on!
The hat is too much, right? Is it the wig or the hat?
There's a bigger picture at hand here. These ghosts can possess the human form.
It sounds to me like Slimer's making a comeback, at least.
Slime's always been big, actually.
Ectoplasm.
Ectoplasm. That's right. Thank you for correcting that.
Who are you going to call dot, dot, dot? We've got to move on. This is how this show works. It's going to be fast-paced. Karen Krizanovic is talking us through the hits of the summer, or her favourites of the summer. We're going to change the pace. We're going to segue neatly into something rather sad, a bit of sad but possibly uplifting French cinema called Staying Vertical. Talk us about this one.
Yeah. Well, this is going to compete in Cannes. And it's Alain Giraudy, I hope I'm saying that right,
yeah.
A French director who actually came up with a homoerotic thriller, Stranger by the Lake. The fact that you know it's homoerotic sort of spoils it a little bit. It's actually the story of this beautiful lake where people go and commune with nature and themselves and other people.
And it's, that is communing with nature,
actually,
isn't it?
Well,
people's book.
I'm nature, you're nature, yes.
Yeah.
And it's actually whether you sort of approve of that kind of thing or not, it's a very interestingly structured thriller, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, if you've seen it, it's one of those ones that sneaks up and it taps you on the back and then, wow, later it kind of smacks you in the face. So this is going to be very interesting where it's taken him a couple years. And this one, there's not a lot about this and people are very excited.
But it's got a shepherdess in it. When I was reading the synopsis, it's a man seduced by a shepherdess in the south of France.
Yes.
Come on. What's not to like?
Hopefully, I mean, if you like lamb, if you're vegetarian, maybe it'll be a problem. I don't know. But what are you doing to those poor sheep, you ask? But they're saying this is taking place in the heart of France, and it's the aim is to make the implausible plausible. so much like real life.
Yeah.
But I think because he's such an interesting filmmaker, that this is going to be really riveting and really worth noting, because the visuals and mostly the pace and the mise-en-scene, that you, he really sucks you into this world. So I don't even care if it's about like a sheep. I watch it. It's going to be good.
I'm intrigued by this one. And yes, on past directorial form, I kind of feel like he's going to make us a strange world that we didn't know we wanted to inhabit, but we're in it and we kind of, we miss it when we have to walk out the cinema.
That's the mark of a real artist.
That is Staying Vertical. That's coming out. That's a French movie coming out this summer. The Lovers and the Despot. We're turning documentary, Karen, for your next choice.
Yeah.
I've read around this subject and it's just kind of been in the pipeline, it seems, for quite a while. Talk us through what's going on
it
with
this. It has been. Okay, well, this is kind of complicated. Korea has North Korea, the bad Korea, as they call it, bad and good Korea, has an interesting approach to cinema. And the leader of North Korea at the time kidnapped the famous actor and actress who had been a couple, were separated, and because he wanted them to be sort of like the king and queen of his cinema empire. I'm putting this very, very boldly. Now, this is a true story. So it's kind of a story of survival, of kidnapping, of romance, of falling out, and of cinema. And we have two filmmakers, Ross Adam and Roger Cannon, who they launch this at Sundance. Now, if you've listened to This American Life, not to mention any competing radio stations, but they've done a wonderful take on this called Same Bed, Different Dreams. It's an interesting, weird story that if it was fiction, you wouldn't buy it. But it's fact.
It's so good. I wonder what sort of footage they have. I mean, this is them. They're making a film. Some of these bits of tape were released. Some of these bits of film were released. So this is spliced together with a bit of directorial commentary and all the rest of it. It sounds like a strange and bewitching mixture.
It's such a strange story. I think putting it together is going to be difficult. But the most important thing is to just kind of enter the weirdness of Kim Jong-il and see what it was like.
I think that's a good one. It's called The Lovers and the Despot. Do we want to talk about the BFG? Do we want to go around the table quickly and talk about the BFG?
Well, it's Spielberg coming back, and now he's in his 70s. It should be very interesting.
Mark Rylance plays the big friendly giant.
Oh, that's what BFG stands for. I was trying to figure out, what's that stand for?
BFG.
What's it mean? I'm sure I can get this.
Surely I haven't voted for the BFG.
And does everybody like Spielberg here?
Yeah, is this not like a weird motion capture facial?
It's a bit Hobbit.
Tintin-ish.
That worries me, but the story you can't fault.
You can't be.
Well, it's his fourth film to debut Cannes, and it's based on the Roald Dahl children's classic. Mark Rylance, as you said, a soft-hearted giant who befriends a young girl. You've got nothing against young girls or giants, so I'm sure you'll love it.
Still thinking about the shepherdess, actually. But anyway,
I'm bang on to Snozcumbers now. Come on. We're going to be talking music, but before that, we're going to preview one of this summer's sunniest festivals, the Primavera in Barcelona. The event, which began in 2001, takes place in the first week of June, and this year sees the likes of Radiohead, LCD Sound System, PJ Harvey and Beirut take the stage in what is one of the summer's best festival lineups. Responsible for this roster of brilliant names is the head of the booking department, Fra Soler, and he speaks to us about this year's festival.
It's a very good lineup this year. We've assembled a pretty good and balanced lineup, and well, the response has been great so far. One of our ideas from the very beginning was to get the city involved in one way or another. We always thought that organizing Primavera-related shows, events, and things happening is a good way to give all the city some kind of involvement in our festival. Also, we planned a whole lot of free shows for people that could not maybe afford a three-day ticket. So in a way, we were giving back the city some bits and pieces of the festival that everybody could enjoy without actually needing to buy the three-day ticket, you know. And this has been developing through the years. We have added several parties, several locations where we can do shows and events related to Primavera around the week before and during the event. Oh, our criteria is strictly musical. So since we believe that there are lots of local bands that are doing great things and they should have a place to show to the public, we try to use that position we are to expose the music from here. And there's always a very high percentage of local bands in our bill. And it's always very rewarding to see that bands from here that started playing at Primavera many years ago have grown and they can now play in our same festival in a much better slot and for a wider crowd. Three highlights for this year. It's so difficult. I mean, I will give you one per day. Floating Points on Thursday, I think it's going to be super special. The album he's released this year, it's fantastic, and I'm expecting a great show. Obviously, on the better known side of the bill, I would highlight Radiohead on Friday 3rd, just because it's possibly the biggest band alive, and we really tried to have them at Primavera for many years, and finally they will be performing here, and we're really happy about it. Then on Saturday, I personally love Karen 93, who would be performing in the auditorium, and it's a fantastic artist that I can't wait to see playing live at Primavera.
And that is the aptly named Fras Soler, head of bookings at Primavera Festival, which takes place at the Parc del Forum in Barcelona from the 1st of June. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and today we're getting ready for the summer with a preview of the best music, film and art happening over the coming months. I'm joined in the studio by the broadcaster Nick Luscombe, film critic Karen Krasanovic, and the head of Listen Gallery's content, Ossian Ward. Now we're turning to Nick Luscombe for our musical Skinny. Nick, thanks for coming in with... Well, we'll pretend that there's LPs under your arm. Mm-hmm. We can make some sound effects. That's the most winning sound of agreement I've ever heard. Uh-huh. Yeah, we can pretend, Rob. I think possibly they're CDs in the deck behind the glass over
there. That's
the
ones, yeah.
So we're going to be playing Kamasai Washington, Idris Akamor, and Calypso Rose. Let's talk about Kamasai Washington first. Yeah. That wonderful record last year. Why is he on your list for this summer?
Well, because he's playing at the Proms this year, which is which is amazing. The Proms from the 15th of July to sort of middle of September. He's on one of the late night Proms towards the end, I think sometime in September. That's good enough for me. I think, You know, I don't know if you saw him, but, you know, I saw him at the Barbican.
I've heard about this gig. Producer Holly went.
Holly was there.
I was green with envy. It sounded like an amazing night. Shall we give our listeners a little bit of Kamasai Washington's vibe? This is Cherokee. Okay, that was Cherokee Kamasai Washington. That his LP was called The Epic, wasn't it, last year?
That's right, yeah,
triple album. And it really was a triple album. I mean, there you go. That's how the... Yeah, exactly.
Straight in.
Were you working on Kamasai? Nothing much. And that comes out. And he's playing... He seems like he's playing everywhere this summer. I mean, in your experience, is that kind of... You're invited to everything. You're very well received. You've got very good management. When you see he's on the roster of so many kind of quite disparate sounding festivals as well, what does that say to you?
Well, he's got an incredible band. I mean, you know, that's the first thing. And it is a brilliant thing. And, you know, young band, Thundercat, who plays in that band, is an incredible person by himself. And just everything just works so well. So when I saw him at the Barbican, it was mind-blowing. loving.
Next up, Idris Akhmor and the Pyramids. This is an amazing thing. We were talking about this in the green room. We called it the green room when we were waiting to come into the studio. I love this album. This is going in the next issue of the magazine, in fact.
Great.
And this was one of those things. We both had that same thought. Where on earth did this come from? And is it some lost thing from the early 70s?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Idris.
Well, Idris was originally from Chicago, right?
Yeah.
And then in the 70s, he formed a band, like early 70s, spent a lot of time in Africa studying, you know, the music from there and just traveling around, and then created this band, The Pyramids, and then they made two or three albums in the 70s, I think it was, and then they kind of disbanded, you know, and then I think nobody really knew what happened to them. I certainly had no idea, really. And then I think there were a lot of reissues, a lot of interest in the band, and then he thought, well, I can do this again, you know, and just 2012, they suddenly appeared with a new record, and now there's a new album, and it's brilliant. It's just got the energy, it's just so dynamic again, you know, but taking that whole music, which is, I don't know, still sounds so fresh, and it's got that maverick, there is a bit of jazz to it. There's a maverick kind of West Coast jazz flavour to it, which is beautiful.
It's called We Be All Africans, isn't it, the record? And it does, it kind of does drill back into if you're rock and roll or jazz, even whatever you are, where we all sort of owe our musical heritage to. Let's take a slice of one of the tracks. This is Rhapsody in Berlin. You heard there a little bit of Rhapsody in Berlin. It's from Idris Akhmor and the Pyramids, from a new record called We Be All Africans. I think that was recorded in Berlin as well. It's one of those interesting things. It sounds like you can hear a dust road in Rabat in there, but actually it's
completely.
It's Unter den Linden, or maybe Mitte. Yeah, it's a welcome return that I didn't know it was a return, you know?
Absolutely. And they'll be coming over to London mid-July as well to play. So 16th and 17th, I think it is. So it'd be brilliant to see them, isn't it?
He's a virtuoso saxophonist, right?
Or trumpet player. Alto saxophonist.
So he's good. It's a good album cover. That's something you want to own on vinyl.
I've got the vinyl. I got it.
Yeah, you've got the vinyl.
It's good, you know? It looks right, isn't it?
Yeah, sparkles. Okay, Nick Luscombe's final choice is Calypso Rose. Producer Holly was saying, this lives up to its name. I said, what does this sound like? It lives up to its name. Should we take a little bit of it? This is called Leave Me Alone. Summer music, indeed. All right, that's Leave Me Alone from Calypso Rose, one of Nick Luscombe's choices as we look ahead to the summer here on The Culture Show for various cultural choices. I was on a cruise last week and I was involved in not one but three congas. That could have been the soundtrack to one of them. I was kicking my leg out subconsciously as we listened to that.
How lovely, yeah.
Hey!
Memories coming back.
Yeah. Is there a name in music for that?
That is the name for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
tell us a little bit about Calypso Rose. I love this. Where did you find this?
Well, this is a new single from a new album. She was born in 1940. And one of 11 kids, moved to Trinidad when she was 9. And then her auntie was just playing her Calypso music. So she very quickly started playing that music herself. I think she released her first record when she was a little bit older than that. And she was known as the Calypso Kid. And then when she became a teenager, she changed her name to Calypso Rosie. So Calypso Rose, sorry.
Changed it back again.
Yeah, then changed it back. You know, she got bored of that. So and then she's been making records ever since. So, you know, and this is a brand new album. Mano Chao features on it as well.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful, isn't
it? It is really good. It is really good. And I like that. I liked Sotto Voce, you sang as that played. You asked me to pick summer music. Why not? Three great choices. Kamasi Washington, Idris Akhmor and the Pyramids, and Calypso Rose are Nick Luscombe's choices. Thank you very much, Nick.
Pleasure.
We're going to turn our spotlight to the gallery wall, and Ossian Ward's looking excited to unveil his canvases for us. Ossian, thank you very much for coming along. And what have you got for us today? Where are we starting? I think we're starting with Carmen Herrera.
The Listen Gallery is opening a new gallery in New York, which is exciting. We've built a whole box to put these in. But we're opening with a remarkable lady. She's 100 now, and she will be 101 shortly. Her name's Carmen Herrera, a Cuban artist born in 1915 and still working away. So we're showing paintings of hers from the last 2 years, believe it or not. And some of these are, I mean, this is a big gallery as well. Yeah. So triptychs, diptychs, huge geometric compositions, totally abstract, very kind of hard-edged, clean, beautiful, very kind of clear, elegant work, which she's been making since the 60s. So she grew up in Cuba, then she moved to Paris, and she moved to New York, back to Paris, back to New York, where she's lived. But, you know, so she knew kind of Mondrian, and she knew Barnett Newman, but she never got in with the guys. She was never in their gang. Yeah. So this is happening a lot these days. I mean, there is a, you know, a phase of looking out for these OWAs, old women artists, who are suddenly coming to the fore. Yeah. And I don't think that it's a bad thing. I don't think it's just people looking for a rediscovery or, you know, I actually think this is great that people are knitting these artists back into the history of art where they've frequently been left out. So the fact that she's from Cuba, but now she's really, she's a New Yorker. She's been there for 50-odd years. So it's great. She's having this show with us, and then in September, she's having a show at the Whitney Museum of American Art. So she is an American artist, truly. And that will be earlier works from the 40s to the 60s, more or less.
And do people kind of, I mean, this is such a time of flux for Cuba. Do people try to read that very much into her work? Or is she interested in that interpretation? Is it explicit? Is it implicit? Or does she not care because she feels that she's a New Yorker, I wonder?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to take any references from her work because it's so abstract. You can look at it as architecture. You can look at the colours, they're vibrant colours. You can look at them as, you know, exotic or tropical, but then sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're pure, flat imagery. So it's quite hard to read anything into her works apart from the kind of compositional elegance. Sometimes these shapes are really coming at you almost three-dimensionally. Sometimes they're very flat and very austere. But there is some sort of colour. I would hesitate to talk about this kind of tropicalia influence as being something, but, you know, it's full of life, and she's been doing it for such a long time. She's really honed it down to a skill.
So that is Carmen Herrera at the newly minted Listen Gallery from the 3rd of May until the 11th of June. Okay, let's go up north. Liverpool Biennial. Tell us why this is on your list.
It may not sound glamorous, but Liverpool's Biennial is becoming, you know, a real great staple of these giant festivals in Europe, and it's one of the better ones. So they've invited no less than 11 curators for this.
Wow. What is the collective noun for that?
An absolute gaggle of...
an absolute piss-up of yes, curators. Okay.
It's a big number. But I think what they've done, which is weird for a biennial, usually a biennial has a big theme, like this is about summer or something, but they have no title. And instead, these 11 curators have worked a bit like you would on Seinfeld or a comedy show, and they've sort of sketched it out in episodes. So they all sat around a table saying, okay, what is this episode? So they've got these episodes, and they are the children's episode, Ancient Greece, Chinatown, Flashback, Moments from the Future, and Software. So there are these kind of themes and hubs, but they're not your classic kind of overarching theme. Let's kind of try and squeeze all these artists into our idea.
This happened before, this way of doing things? Because it's very much this kind of omnipotent curatorial thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and the idea that things get done by committee doesn't usually work. But this idea that you can create something like a sitcom or a comedy show or a film by putting good heads together does actually work, as we've seen from, you know, American TV. That's how they make it work. So there's a way in which that can kind of disrupt the single curator's mind and the one person kind of overarching. So, and the projects will be very different. There won't be this kind of homogenous, you know, one vision. So one of them is the Japanese artist Koki Tanaka, who's actually looking back to this moment in Liverpool in 1985 where a bunch of kids, kind of 10-year-old kids, went on strike because of the impending YTS. I don't know if you remember this. The
youth training scheme. Yeah.
And so there were all these kids on the street, and he's going to recreate this mad child strike from 1985.
That's so good. That sounds like a very Jeremy Deller
thing. Jeremy's not in this, but Mark Leckie is.
Okay,
there are some other, you know, names that you might recognise. But I think it's less about the names and more about what the artists are doing. They're really kind of interacting with the fabric of Liverpool, and there's a great artist called Oliver Larrick who's going to be scanning, 3D scanning sculptures from Liverpool collections, and then making them free, available for anyone to 3D print, you know, whoever
nice.
Wants to.
Do you feel that there is an idea that's pioneers in cities like Liverpool, which very much welcome something like this with open arms, and really people want to roll up their sleeves and get involved? People maybe scratch their heads and wonder what it's all about, but kind of do it with a spirit of bonhomie and inclusion. Do you think they work really well in places like that, rather than places that have become a little bit, I don't know, weighted down and freighted with the art world sometimes?
Yeah, and I think probably there's suspicion at the beginning, and then that goes into, like you said, this kind of community spirit and wanting to get on with it. They're also focusing, you know, on Chinatown. There's this giant Chinese archway in the middle of Liverpool, the second biggest outside of Shanghai. So there are bits of the community that they're going to engage with that they haven't before. But yeah, in a way, it's still a young biennial. It hasn't got to the Venice stage where it's kind of very grand and overblown. But as we'll see with our next topic, you know, there are some places where having a biennial seems weird. And this is, biennials like to pop up in places where people think they need regeneration. It's like another version of a Guggenheim. Let's have a biennial. Mm. Let's kind of make our town great again. And I don't think that Liverpool feels like that anymore. It doesn't feel like it's kind of desperately trying to be something. It's got its own vision. It's got its own character. And I think that's really appealing.
That is the Liverpool Biennial, beautifully described by Ossian Ward. It runs from the 9th of July until the 16th of October. Plenty of scope to get on the train and go and see that. We talked about weird places to have biennials. Manifesta in mm-hmm. Zurich. Tell us about this one.
So Manifesta specialise in these off... They don't have a biennial in the same place. So every 2 years they go somewhere different. San Sebastian, they went to somewhere called Genk in... I don't even know where that is, somewhere in Belgium. But, you know, really strange, off-the-beaten-track places, possibly that do need regeneration or culture. But Zurich, no, it doesn't. It's a rich banking town. So the idea that they were moving at that kind of sent everyone for a spin, like, why is Manifesta doing this? But to kind of combat that, they chose an artist to curate it called Christian Jankowski. And he's looked at it from a very interesting angle. He's called the biennial What People Do for Money. And he's basically looked at all the historic professions in Zurich, banking, baking, policemen, firemen. And, you know, they were all in little areas of the city, a bit like in London, you had a guild for the artists and a guild for the craftsmen and the carpenters. And so he's invited all these artists to work with different professions. So we have people who are working with opera singers, psychotherapists, a spa manager to make new works. And we have enfant terrible French author Michel Houellebecq, who's going to have his brain scanned by a doctor and it all revealed as an exhibit. And then there's another guy who's gone to the sewage plant and is collecting all of the Zurich's human excrement, let's say, and making a giant sculpture out of it. So it's going to be a different way of engaging with the city.
Ghostbusters 2.
cross the streams, please.
That again sounds amazing. We've run out of time to say anything really more than Manifesta, the European Biennial of Contemporary Art. It's on in Zurich, and the name of the artist again, because I know him, he's
Christian Jankowski or Jankowski.
He's a great guy. 11th of June to the 18th of September. That is on. Ossian Ward, Karen Krasanovich and Nick Luscombe, thank you very much indeed for your choices. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was the quickfire Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thanks for tuning in.